Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. Anyways, we're back. Yesterday was Valentine's. Happy Valentine's to everybody. I hope you got some roses or whatever. You know, what is a guy supposed to get for Valentine's Day?
What are we supposed to get?
Yeah, like, you know, I mean,
everything that the dinner and movie and flowers and candy paid for. I think it would be the answer.
That would be the answer, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Nobody really ever... That's a good point. Usually what I've been exchanged with is everything that the aforementioned paid for. That's all you need to get me is a naked woman. That's pretty much it. I'd be happy. That I have full access to, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. I'm good. Men are simple like that.
I know. We're very simple minded. I guess that's why we love boxing so much, you know?
That woman doesn't even have to be the woman I'm dating. If the woman I'm dating brings me a naked woman, that's, you know, cool. Even that works too. We work that way.
Yeah. That's, that'd be like a birthday present and a Christmas present and a Valentine's present wrapped up in one.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I had a great Valentine's Day. I got myself an article for maxboxing.com, and I just sat there and worked on it all night. I don't know about you. It sounded like you're the love machine, so you went out and I'm sure did some crazy stuff.
I didn't get the extra girl being brought to the bedroom scene, but I did have a good Valentine's Day. Anyways, we got some boxing to talk about here on Leaving the Ring this Saturday. Adrian Broner and The Brush are going to be back in the ring, and this time it's going to be against the UK fighter, Gavin Reese. And it's a really interesting fight. You know, it's been kind of slow for this month. You know, not a whole lot of love for boxing, but it's going to start picking up in March.
I hope so. This first quarter has been brutal.
Yeah,
this fight after fight after fight canceled, postponed.
Have you ever noticed that? Think about last year, in the beginning of the year of 2012, all these fights were lined up, all these fights were ready to go, and all of a sudden they all just fell apart. You know, Danny Garcia pulling out because of a rib injury, then his old lady tweeting out there saying, "Fool, I saw you at the club." Hey, at least we were kind of entertained for a bit on Twitter. So, I mean, that's the only reason why I get on Twitter is to be entertained and kind of listen, watch everybody use their computer powers over the internet. You know, the cyberbullying that folks like to do on Twitter. I think that's, you know. But it started back up, and Friday Night Fights is getting back into the mix, and then we're going to roll in on a Saturday on HBO, like I said, with Adrian Broner, who's just a character, man. The guy's just funny as hell, and no matter what he does, the kid just keeps you entertained. I can really watch him any day of the week.
He's kind of like that buddy of yours that always has something funny to say. I had a buddy that I'm thinking of particularly. He's just one of those innately funny people that you look at him. I'm not saying he's funny looking, but you look at him and you just start smiling because you know he's going to say something funny. He's just always got – he's just a character, like you said.
He's the class clown.
Yeah,
I mean?
Totally.
He is the class clown. Anyways, really quick, if you haven't noticed, I've been tweeting it out there, putting it on Facebook as well, that we finally released our mobile app for Android and for iPhone, Apple Store. The easiest way to download is to go to our website and click on the picture that it says right there, Leaving the Ring app. Click it, download to your phone. It's a really fun app. Obviously, we're toying with it right now. We're trying to, you know, play with it and add different things to it. And a little bit, our the person that developed the app for us, which was Scotch Mob, they represent us, and they've been putting in a lot of work for Leaving the Ring, and they've been really taking care of us. And this app, we really owe that to them because they put in a lot of hours. I mean, it was a large amount of time and patience, especially with me, because I'm always, you know, kind of picky about what I want to do. And Scott's mom was able to get it done for us. You know, it's really cool. You can follow myself and Gabriel at the same time on Twitter, and you can keep up on whatever we're tweeting out there. You can follow us on Facebook off of the mobile app. You can get on our Instagram. You can read the RSS feed of news that comes from our website directly to the mobile. You can read about the team. You can, you know, find out a little bit more about us. You can listen to the radio show. It's a whole lot of stuff. And you get and we notify you on the mobile when we're about to come on and who's going to be on the show, rather than finding out on Twitter or anything else like that. It just goes directly to your phone. So it's a really fun app. So check it out, download it, and give us your feedback on what you think about our new app and what we can improve, or if you're just satisfied with what we're able to produce.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I mean, I think everything – I'm still kind of learning about how all this stuff works. I've been going through the app, but it's much more convenient. I spend a lot of time on the run, so, you know, I'm turning into a commercial. And so when I'm on the run and I need my boxing info, I turn to my iPhone. And with this app, though, I'm pretty stoked by it. It's I'm kind of proud to be a part of it. You know, it's something new, it's something different. And that's kind of what the show is all about, is doing something new and doing something different.
Yeah, we always are trying to do something new and different. You know, it's our way of giving back to the fight fans and the listeners out there. So it was, you know, we've been wanting to do this for quite some time, and you know, we're just happy that we were able to be the very first boxing radio show to produce a mobile app. And I didn't think we were, actually. I thought, you know, a lot of other folks had already done it and stuff. And I got on there and I noticed there wasn't one app out there. There was those TuneIn and other things, but they put a variety of different sports talks on their mobile app. There was not one that was solely dedicated just for boxing. So we wanted to do that, man. It's our way of giving it back. It's for free. You don't have to pay anything. You know, it's strictly our gift from, you know, myself and from Gabriel to the listeners and the fight fans out there. Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Let's see what's on your mind.
That night, I don't have to keep tweeting out the link constantly. I'm always trying to, like, track it while we're doing the show, you know, and with the app, it just makes it so much easier, you know, rather than kind of playing that game where we're always like, okay, well, where do I find the link? It's not working for me. I can't log on. Now you can just do it on your phone.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, it definitely. You know, I think we're going to be giving up some options too. You know, I know this whole Block Talk thing has always been kind of a pain in the butt, and we're working on leaving Block Talk, and it's going to be pretty soon. We're just figuring out the technical parts of this new system that we're going to be doing, and it's going to be really fun because me and Gabriel are not going to have to mute ourselves when we're talking, and you're not going to hear an echo. It should be done. It's going to be done professionally, and that's the road that we're headed to, so that we can provide the best content possible to you guys. We got Josecito Lopez that's going to be running through the show in a short bit about noon. Talk to us about what's up and coming for himself, and then we're going to talk some boxing and make our predictions of this weekend's fights, today, Friday night fights, and then for Saturday. So if you want to call in and you want to tell us what's on your mind and what you want to vent out, you certainly can. 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring Radio with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya, who's been throwing out some articles, dishing them out, you know. This is a surprising thing is that we talk about doing a service, and the service sometimes, there's a cost with that, which that cost sometimes could be you get a group of people that just are not going to like what you're show and telling. And sometimes that show and telling can really spark, or actually, I kind of find it funny how sometimes it affects people so much. You know, they get so angry. You know, they get so upset when you're investigating.
So mad at me.
Yeah,
it's really weird. It's turned into a real personal thing. I mean, I guess, you know, it's an afternoon show. We're just kind of chilling. We don't have a hell of a lot of guests today, so let's just talk about it. It was something I wanted to do last night. Like I told you, I wanted to call it the Love Hour and invite all the haters to come on and really like try to actually slow your hate down.
The Love Hour.
The Love Hour. And you know, because there's not a lot of fights going on right now, so we got to do something to entertain ourselves. We all want to talk boxing. I invited the angry gentleman from the Bay Area that cooks for a living. Nothing wrong with that. I love a good meal. I enjoy cooking myself. But you get your news and your info from, like, Twitter and other places. You refuse to actually see certain facts, and yet you'll accuse me of being a homosexual. Nothing wrong with it. I'm just not one. With Victor Conte. Again, you know, I don't know. Some people might think Victor's cute. You know, he's not my type. I know Victor's great. It's kind of interesting, that whole connection. People say, oh, you know, you're Victor Conte's puppet and this and that. It just doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. If you really look at the timeline, I started writing about PEDs and had interest in it with the whole Floyd incident. And just even with Floyd asking Manny and all that, it was a hot topic. Actually, well before I met Victor Conte. I met Victor like a few months after. I think March was my first article in 2010. And I met him on this show, or I think around the Sidorenko fight, like June or May of that year. So like it took some time for us to kind of cross paths. We're of like minds. I was actually much more radical than Victor is when we met. I was like 365, 24/7, you know, it's got to happen, and it's mandatory or nothing. You know, I was really all or nothing. And Victor showed me the whole idea of half a loaf of bread is better than no bread at all. And he said that on this show and was like, you got to just got to take steps. I don't have a problem agreeing with a guy who's is making sense. You know, you look at USADA, the way that all started out, I had questions about what tests were going on. What was the procedure? I like to know how things work. I don't just take things on face value. I think that's a big problem with this world, is generally the masses, the sheep, kind of just say, oh, okay, government, just tell me what to think and what to do, and we'll do it. And when Floyd said, like, take the test, everybody's like, yeah, take the test, because slogans are great. History's shown us that slogans are great. Work will make you free, I believe it said in front of the concentration camps. take the test, everybody's screaming that. But as we rolled along, I kept just chugging away, you know, going, yeah, but what test? What do you mean? But then we learned what the tests were. Carbon isotope ratio testing was one in particular for a drug that turned out to be popular, synthetic testosterone. We moved along. VADA all of a sudden pops up. We're going to use that test as a mandatory screener. Meanwhile, I'm still trying to get USADA to even answer an email or talk to me in any way, shape, or form, or anybody connected with it to go on record, other than some sort of prearranged press conference like they held initially to announce, you know, this dawning new age of Mayweather testing in boxing. I think all these things have happened logically. The people that get mad at me, because now we've seen Morales Garcia too. I mean, look at the last year. Golden Boy threatened to sue me because I was investigating the possibility of someone being able to test positive under their agreement with USADA and a fight still going on. And people got mad at me, vilified me. You're just trying to hate on Floyd. They kept yelling at that part of it, the Floyd testing positive three times rumor in that thing, and kept ignoring the thing that I was really asking about in the first place that would enable that to happen. We fast forward to Morales Garcia too. And what do we have? A scenario where that looked like it was about to happen, unless Scott Hale and HaleStormSports.com hadn't broke the story. And then you look at my article today, which is part two of USADA Golden Boy and the positive test results management on Match Boxing. I think I lay it out pretty quick, or pretty succinctly.
Right.
What's going on, what the agreement really is. There's wording that shows, you know, these guys signed this. It's not sinister. It's just that they're cutting out the commission and trying to set up USADA as like the sole, having the sole jurisdiction over these fights and what happens. And the fighters are willingly doing it, but is that legally binding, considering that boxing is set up state by state and, you know, run state by state by each government there? It doesn't make a lot of sense. It outlines Pat English's letter. I think people should read. It's too much for me to just go into all through this show. We could take up the whole show doing it. I don't want to do that. But the bottom line is this, is that the guys getting mad at me that have been offered a platform like that guy from the Bay Area, or guys on other shows I hear, you know, really have a lot to say. There's that kid, Jay Rosales, who gets all angry at me constantly, refers to me as Milhouse. All these people that are insulting, they're ignoring the facts and making themselves look ignorant, siding with Memo Heredia, a guy that's lied to the publicly, and I've pointed it out multiple times now.
Yeah, that's funny to me, you know what I mean?
There's partisanship there. You know, they're just like, oh, he's Mexican, and we don't like Gabriel, so I'm going to let that do my thinking. Slow your hate down. Use your brain. Look at the facts. And you'll understand the problem much better. That's what I think. Quit yelling at me. I'm just a reporter. I'm just showing you things.
Exactly.
So, it's annoying. What can you do?
Not much. Not much you can do. You know, I'm gonna patch in really quick our mobile app designer. I guess I would call her Stephanie. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Really quick, just so the listeners know that if they're gonna download the app, what they need in order to download it, because I know some folks were saying they weren't able to open up the app application. So just point out some things and some facts about the application. You there, Steph?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, great. So thank you for having me on. Real quickly, you did a great job of running down through the application. Thank you for that. I'm actually connected to you right now through the application. Just want to let everybody know that in order to download the application, this is a web-based hosted application. You do need to have, if you have an iPhone, it needs to have an OS of 5 or higher. If you have an Android, it needs to be an OS of 2.3.3 or higher. So some people, we got some feedback that people weren't just seeing a hanging screen, and if that happens, you need to just check the logistics on your phone to see if you have the appropriate operating system. One of the other things I did misspoke earlier, somebody had asked me if they were logged in through the Blog Talk Radio feature, if they could still use the text messaging and native application features on their phone, and I had said yes. However, I discovered that you need to be connected through the Connect feature, which is the dial-in on your phone. That allows you, if you're receiving text messages or you want to be listening to the show, you can simultaneously be sending text messages and using native features on your phone. If you are logged in listening through the Blog Talk Radio feature, which actually utilizes the Wi-Fi on your phone through the web, it will halt, such as the same capability like when you're listening to Pandora and you receive a text message or you need to send one, the application will halt. Now, that's because you're utilizing the web-based functionality native feature on your phone. So you have two ways to connect through the show. One is through the phone, through the Connect, which is directly below Home on the menu. And then you can also go through the RSS feed through the Blog Talk Radio feature if you wish to utilize the Wi-Fi on your phone. The difference between utilizing either or really depends on the user's preference. You can utilize the data gigabytes through your phone if you have an unlimited data plan and you don't wish to use your minutes. And that would be the reason why you would choose to connect through your phone versus through the Blog Talk Radio feature. Some of the other cool things, as Dave already ran through, is we're tapped into all the RSS feeds that automatically update for YouTube, so for the Leave It in the Ring YouTube channel, for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. All of that is tapped in the application and updates automatically. The other cool thing about it, having the application on your phone, is anytime we make updates to it, you don't need to reinstall or worry about updating anything. It all occurs on its own.
I like the fact that you can call the radio show directly from the app as well. That's a really cool feature. I mean, we get so many folks to ask for the number. They're like, what's the number again? Because they say I run it on the radio show really quick. So this time – and the other thing too is that our email is directly on that app as well. So you can email any of your questions or anything that you are thinking and wanting to talk about here on Leaving the Ring. Well, Steph, if there's anything else to add, this is a great application. You can find Stephanie and Scotch Mob if you are looking for her to do any work for you or your website or radio show. Get a hold of Stephanie, the owner of Scotch Mob. She does a great, great job for us here for Leaving the Ring. She's done a tremendous job, and she's done a lot of things for us, and it shows. You can see it. You can be able to download.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure. Great show.
Great show.
Thank you. No, I really appreciate it. I think it's really exciting, Stephanie, to have this kind of move in. And really last year with you joining the team, and just, you know, while you're here with the air on us, I mean, we did a live stream, you know, we started moving into that territory, doing the mobile live streams with you, and now this. I'm really excited for 2013. I think we got some, I know you know our plans. We've got some exciting stuff coming ahead. I'm just really excited to have you on the team. So thank you so much. and happy Friday.
Thank you, gentlemen. Take care.
Okay.
All right. So business.
I know. Like,
trying to be warm and
I know.
Like, look, Valentine's was yesterday, pal. I need it today. I don't need your charms. I don't need your love. I'm out of here.
We're talking to Stephanie. Stephanie's really one of those people that's just, you know, and ready to go. You got to slow her down and stuff sometimes. And I hear it was like thank you, gentlemen.
It was like overseas, you know, like she was like waiting to hear it. It was like delayed, and then thank you. I'll see you guys some other time. You know, it was kind of funny, but you know, I think the app speaks for itself. It's awesome stuff. You know, the fact that it's going to be so convenient. We're already getting guys in the UK kind of asking about it. I'm not sure. I don't know if you use the Viber app, which can get you. You know, using Wi-Fi, you get like free calls and texts. But I don't know if you can use it to just call random numbers in the UK that aren't on Viber. That's
I don't know. She got me there, man. I mean, when it comes to stuff like that, I'm not really.
You'd be surprised. It's kind of funny, the people that are on there. It automatically shows you all the people that are in your iPhone, like contacts, who's on Viber. And I was like, oh, there's a few that really come in handy, but we'll talk about that off the show, off the air. Do you want to take a caller here? We're waiting for our first guest, Toriano Johnson, 11:45. And then I believe we have Josecito Lopez later on at noon. Still have feelers out to a few other guests. I mean, it's kind of a middle of the day. We're doing the nooner, as we call it. So we'll see. The show may be long. It may be short. It may go on forever. We're not sure.
347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Going back with Adrian Broner. Watching tape is useless. You can watch my fight a million times, but when you get in the ring with me, you'll say, he isn't doing the things I saw before. Real confident kid. Really confident kid. You know, some folks were actually thinking that Reese looked a bit intimidated when they had did their face-off. I mean, I think it's kind of hard to do a face-off with Adrian Broner because he's not a very predictable person. His kid is always coming up with something new and different, and his confidence just really comes across pretty strong. You know, I think anybody that's going to face him, you have to be very strong-minded. And that self-belief that he has in himself, it carries out enough that everybody around him honestly believes what he believes, that he's going to be an undefeated fighter for quite some time. Now it's up to the opponent, in my opinion, to have some type of a reflector, a shield, you know, block it off, make it bounce off of you. Because, you know, we all know that the fight game, it is a physical sport, but a lot of times the mental part is the more crucial part. You know, you have to go in there mentally. I used to go to the gyms all the time, and I would hear a kid go, oh, I'm not going to do good in the ring. I'm not going to do good in sparring right now. And I would tell him, hey, don't say that, because automatically you're already embedded in your mind that you're not going to perform. And pretty much that's what happens. You don't end up performing the way you're supposed to do. So what Adrian Broner does, which you know, a lot of fighters have mastered and have been able to use, Bernard Hopkins is one of the guys that come to mind. Muhammad Ali was notorious for it. It's just to really make the other guy feel that they're normal, that they're not super, that they're not that great, and they're never going to be great. Roberto Duran, too, was a guy who was very vocal. Ricardo Mayorga was a guy that, you know, just taunted his opponents. But Adrian Broner taunts his opponents, but it's a different way. There's a different manner in how he does it. It's taunting his opponent, but at the same time, taunting him by basically letting him know, I am better. Because he really strongly believes that he is the best athlete right now for the new era of boxing.
Yeah, he is. It's interesting. I was talking to somebody last night. I'm glad you brought this up. We're talking about Mayweather and who he's going to fight. I was talking with somebody that's pretty high level person, pretty well connected, I should say. They were kind of schooling me on what they think is going down. And you know, Floyd hasn't announced his opponent, and everything's kind of being held up. Richard Schaefer even seemed, and Steve Kim, he wrote the Waiting Game on Monday. It was his article. It was kind of like,
yeah,
what's
I saw
going
that,
on
read
with,
that. Uh-huh.
Going on with Floyd. What this guy was basically talking about was the possibility of the fight between Showtime and HBO trying to get Floyd. But he brought up, you know, because basically Espinoza and Heyman, Espinoza, Heyman, and Schaefer are trying to deliver Floyd to Showtime. It's kind of like the linchpin of the whole deal.
Right.
But that would weaken Al Heyman's position over at HBO because you would lose his Mayweather muscles, as Steve calls them. What this guy said was that what's possibly happening is there's a multi-fight deal being negotiated with HBO for the services of one Adrian Broner for the foreseeable future. If Heyman, who has Broner, can secure that deal, as you know, and everybody's happy with it, then expect to see Floyd Mayweather on Showtime in his next fight.
Wow.
So they'll be taking over that network, but they'll also be solidifying the future with Broner at HBO because we all know he's the next guy. I mean, it's just pretty clear. And when Gavin Reese even kind of looks at him, and you know, people said he was intimidated, I haven't seen it. But I think everybody, you know, it's like what John Molina always talks about. When a dude sees me at the weigh-in, it's a big difference between like hearing that he's going to fight me because they're giant guys for their weight. I mean, they're already now – the last time I talked to Mike Stafford was a few months back, like 2 months back, and he said – they were going to stay at lightweight for a while. Now they're talking about 140. And
that would be a great move. But like I said last time, I think that there's room to grow for Broner. You know, I hate to see guys just become more of a hurry up to get there rather than take your time and walk up there because there's going to be walk down the hill. It's that old saying, you know, with the two bulls, the baby bull and the big bull, you know, dad, let's go down there and try to screw one of them. And dad goes, no, let's walk down there and screw them all. I like to see fighters do that, you know, take their time and just gradually move his way into getting the bigger and better fights out there. You know, if anything, you know, Broner, who likes to mirror himself like Floyd Mayweather, he could pick up on that one move that Floyd did was he allowed all the welterweights to claw each other up and eliminate each other, and it thinned it out, so it made the fight even bigger when Floyd decided to fight one of the welterweights in the division. At 140, there's a lot of guys there, and Adrian, if he got into that mix right away, there's a strong possibility he's not going to stay undefeated. Strong possibility that he can end up becoming like a Fernando Vargas, you know, a lot of promise and just moved himself too quick, too soon, and was literally his prime was literally just beaten out of him.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting with Broner because, you know, with Floyd at 130, 135, he really, you know, cleaned it out. He was the guy. With Broner, you know, we didn't see unification. We haven't seen that yet, even approached by – well, I guess Broner was trying to unify. What's-his-face didn't want to fight him, Ricky Burns. And hasn't really wanted to fight him, you know, 130 or 135. I mean, there's not right. a lot for him to do. What's going to be interesting about Broner is moving up to 140 and seeing what Golden Boy does with him because he's a Golden Boy fighter for now. I'm not sure how much longer the deal lasts for Broner with Golden Boy, but I think once that deal is up, I wouldn't be surprised to see him become just an Al Heyman fighter. And kind of go along with the way most Al Heyman fighters do, which is they have no real paper with a promoter. At least that's what I understand. So it'd be interesting to see where they go with Broner in that regard. But I don't know. There's a lot of things changing here. You know, Floyd's only got a couple more fights, maybe three more fights, I think, that they'll milk. But there's even more stuff. I mean, man, I'm still processing everything that this guy kind of told me. He explained a lot of what he thinks is Floyd's deal with Al. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. That's the conversation that happened like really late last night. So I'm still kind of trying to figure out exactly what his move is. I mean, if he goes to 140, I mean, you got Lucas Matisse. You've got so many fighters there.
So many fighters out there.
They're
you know?
All Golden Boy fighters.
Yep.
But is Daddy Al Garcia. Heyman going to risk him? I mean,
right.
do you think he's that much better? I mean, do you think he's that much better than Lucas Matisse? Or I know he can beat Khan, but Khan's a bigger, taller guy. is Bruner so much better than everybody else that at 140 he's going to be able to just handle that storm? And is that where they're going to live for the next 2 years?
Right.
I think that's very interesting. You know, I mean, he's kind of the draw. He's the name. Matisse is great and everybody likes him, but he doesn't really sell tickets. Not the way a Bruner can, I don't think.
Well, I mean, Bruner definitely sells tickets in his hometown, you know, and that would be the place to keep him. I'm not sure whether he can sell out of his hometown yet, you know. But Fight Fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's patch in some Fight Fans who maybe want to talk about the same subject or bring up another point of view of what they think is going on. I'm going to call out your area code. And then you can either tell me, no, I'm just listening, or you want to talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Area code 210. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, what's up? This is Rod, guys. How's it going?
Good, brother. How you doing, man?
What's up, man?
Oh, good. At work. Looking forward to seeing Bruner fight again. It's been kind of slow with the boxing schedule. A lot of injuries have been real depressing. But, I agree with y'all. I think he's good for another showcase. I think it's okay. You know, the kid's, he's 23 years old, and you know, there's not much out for him. So these showcase fights, these kind of fights where we know he's going to win, I really don't feel too angry about, because there really is nothing else out there. And, you know, like I said, he's young, and I'm hoping he can carry some weight. You know, I kind of like to act. You know, it's good for boxing. Even the people that hate him, you got to admit it sells. You know, and
it sells, man.
It brings flavor to the sport, you know.
Right.
It brings flavor to the sport. So it's good to have guys like that. I mean, I hated Prince Nassim Hamed when he was doing his thing, but after he was gone and there wasn't a Hamed around for a while, I kind of appreciated him. I was like, man, we really could use a guy like that. So I don't know. I'm looking forward. I think he's going to take him out. I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be a while until he gets challenged, like you said, 140. I don't see any rush, you know.
That's really that's a good point. You know, Hamed, I was never a big fan of his, but when you get objectivity when he's gone and you kind of go, man, I didn't really hate him. He just. You know, he was the bad guy. He got those feelings going in you. It was actually like a good thing. I haven't been that emotionally involved in a fight in a long time. You watch Hamed, and you're rooting for a guy that has absolutely no chance to beat him, but you just don't like Hamed that much.
Exactly.
Bruner doesn't inspire me to – I don't consider him a bad guy. I think he's – I want to see what he's going to do next. It's fun. And Reese, I don't think he's going to win, but I don't think it's a mismatch. I think showcase is a good way to put it, you know. Because Reese has a shot. He's a contender.
Right.
You know, but he's 32. Things are against him. But I think it's going to be a fun fight. I mean, I got Bruner like an 8. I don't know. What do you got?
Yeah, I think I might even be quicker than that. I'm looking forward to it. I got one more question, Gabe. It's real quick. I know how y'all, there were the comparisons, and we were saying how, hey, you know, you know, people are taking more interest in him than Andre Ward. You know, do you think, you know, maybe he's not that bad of a guy? It's just, he's seen the Floyd Act sells, and it does real well. I mean, I don't know if it's the culture we live in now that, you know, it's the hip-hop, you know, loudmouth guy that, you know, gets all the fans to the attention and the pay-per-view buys as far as American audience.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Andre has just kind of got – I mean, you're asking me basically why do I think one would sell more than the other, or why do we connect with Adrian more?
Well, kind of like more African American fighters too. I mean, like the nice guys like Shane Mosley and stuff. They should have been. He should have been huge in my opinion. But it's just, you know, everybody's like the guy with controversy.
And even I think like Andre has more of a platform than Sugar Shane does. Like you kind of know Andre's opinions on things. You know, he's not afraid to say how he feels about a certain fighter. He speaks his mind sometimes when it's not popular. I think he's a much more like I like listening to Shane talk, but like Andre kind of comes across as like more of an intellectual guy. He's a commentator and a good one, and yet still there's a disconnect. People don't quite fully embrace him. And I think there's a little bit of a, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but a little bit of a like a intellectual coldness maybe with Andre. He's kind of really analytical, but there's like his passion doesn't roll through. You know, he seems very serious all the time.
Right.
And I don't know, though. Yeah, because Shane was, like, always super friendly, and he was a monster in the ring. And he didn't connect either. That is interesting. I mean, I'm not – it's not really for me to comment on what makes the African-American community move. You know, I'm not –
I mean, look
at
Ward.
That experience. But
Ward, too, is he's not getting that embrace. They're not embracing him. They're really not giving him that ultra – feeling that he is a great champion. You know, he's a I actually see more UK fans that are embracing him and recognizing what his capabilities are, you know? And it's kind of sad how the good guy, they really do finish last.
Yeah, it is kind of odd. I mean, you know, Broner seems like a good guy. I know he's caught some cases or whatever, but, you know, he seems to be a guy that is just having a good time, you know?
Really good time.
I mean, I am curious about that because, like, Andre hasn't caught any cases, and I know Broner has, and yet he gets celebrated more. You know, I mean, the guy did a video for a song called Cook, and he's not talking about cooking dinner. You know, yet people dig him, and he got to sing it. Like, you know, we put it on cable, you know, and did a whole production number or whatever. That is weird. I mean, I'm not African American, so I can't speak from an educated point, you know.
Right. You know, the whole thing with Andre Ward though is that I think he was trying to show his dark side of himself. A little while back, I don't know if you guys remember, he was tweeting, you know, criticizing Kessler and Frotch, and it was kind of a backlash there though, and it kind of, you know, shunned him a little bit. Because, you know, some folks were feeling it was kind of hypocritical. I mean, you were going after Kelly Pavlik, who just recently retired out of the fight game. And I think he was trying to, you know, maybe start up a buzz, but it just didn't work. Why? Because it didn't feel organic, you know. It just kind of felt forced, you know, where, wait a minute, you're a guy of God, and then all of a sudden you're trying to be a hypocrite at the same time. It's not going to work. You either start like a Broner, the way he started off, which is just, he just let his personality just take over. Or if you try to change in between, sometimes it works and a lot of times it doesn't. You know, Floyd Mayweather is a perfect example where he was real docile in the beginning of his career, didn't say a whole lot, more of a shy type of kid. But then when he realized he wasn't getting the bigger fights and that big money, he chased that. He created that ego. And Ward has to figure out how to create an ego if he's looking to get that big money and to be recognized, you know, become a household name in the sport of boxing, not just the sport of boxing, the sports of everything, you know. And I think they've been trying their hardest with him by making him do some commentary. You know, he's a good spokesperson, very intelligent person, you know, when you talk to him. But he just doesn't come across as the guy that is going to entertain you when he talks. Because there's really not a whole lot. Nobody wants their blood sport mixed with their religion. Let's put it that way, you know?
I mean, maybe there's – well, other guys kind of get it out of the way. It's interesting because like Dan Goosen, I remember – I think this is a few fights back. I think maybe somewhere in the Super 6 he said this, that Andre's going to make classy cool again. And he hasn't quite made it cool again. I mean – you know, I'm not saying, I think I like Andre. I like that he's a gentleman, and I respect that. You know, he's a guy of skill, and you know, he's classy in and out of the ring. I mean, I think he's a gamer. He can be kind of, like they say, like chippy sometimes, like his back and forth with Frotch. But he's a gentleman, and I actually kind of like that. I like all, but you know, everybody's different. I don't think one way is the right way or the wrong way in boxing. I think what Floyd does is genius. You know, I think we've seen it.
Right. Alexander.
Yeah.
It's a genius move because it got everybody go, dude, I'd rather watch the Guerrero fight. I'd rather you fight Guerrero. You know what I mean? And that buzz took off. I had a chance to talk to the Guerrero camp about it, and you know, they had a smile. They wouldn't really comment about a whole lot about it. You know, because I wouldn't say they're on a gag order, but they can't talk about anything that if there is any type of negotiations and stuff. Anyways, hey, brother, thanks for calling. I'm going to put you back on hold. I'm going to patch in another caller.
All right, guys, take it easy.
Hey, make sure you download the app too, man.
Oh, I got it.
All right, brother. Thanks. Anyways, this patch in another fight fan here on Leaving the Ring. I want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's go with area code 447, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hello. What's up, brother? How you doing?
Yeah, big fan from the UK. Gabe, I'm really impressed with your work. And I just want to say, what do you think of the fight between Broner and Burns?
Between Broner and Burns?
Yeah.
You know, I think Ricky gives him more trouble than people give him credit for. But I think
that's because Ricky throws a lot of punches. You know, I mean, I like Ricky a lot too, and I think that Broner needs somebody that needs to be busy. The question is, though, this is my question: if the fight was to happen and if Ricky had got the opportunity, is his workmanship, his workmanlike hand, you know, put out of punches, how long would it last before he's discouraged by one of Broner's punches? You know, his Broner places his punches, to my opinion, perfectly. He times it. He knows exactly where it's got to go to take away your arsenal. He did it to DeMarco, but DeMarco was a more slower-paced guy, but he was heavy-handed, and Broner just really fought his game. I don't know if – I don't know how quick Broner would be able to figure out a buzzsaw like Ricky Burns.
It'd be interesting, yeah, because he'd be having to slice through that offensive output, you know. But I've heard from guys that, you know, Broner just hits ridiculously hard, like hits ridiculously strong.
Right.
And I wonder if Ricky, because I think Broner's a guy passing through 135 on his way to 147 ultimately. Burns is kind of a guy I think that'll probably finish his career at 140, but it'll be like, you know, the kind of dregs end of the career, you know, where he doesn't want to make the 135 anymore. I think he'd be fine at lightweight for a long time. He's more of a natural to the weight. So I think that volume, it depends on how well Ricky places his shots. He's got a shot, but I don't think of him as a big puncher. So I would tab Broner in it, but I think it would be longer and better than most people would say it would be. You know?
I think the fight's been building up for a good few years now, and from a commercial point of view, I think Burner v. Bronze is going to be a big fight because it's going to make massive revenue on UK pay-per-view, especially on Sky Box Office. So I think they've been building it up, and I think it will be a huge fight. And whether it takes place in the UK, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think it'll take place in the UK? Do you think Broner would come over? Because it would make, like, you know, it'd probably sell out a soccer stadium.
That would be brave of him to do. I would love to see him do that because just like you mentioned right now, I think there's a lot of money for Broner to make heading over there. You know, being at a soccer stadium, if Broner's looking for that big breakout, it would be a wise choice. But at the same time, he loses all his perks. You know, his advantage, which would be he's at home. The home court advantage is just completely taken away. It's a big risk. I know he's brave in the ring, but is he brave enough to go across seas to show his braveness?
I don't think he does it. You know,
I don't think so either.
You know, people are like, I don't know, but Burns probably would come over here. I mean, a lot of fighters. It always surprises me the UK fighters that say this to me that they really want to be on HBO in America. Like to them, they consider that success. And I look at them and I'm like, but you guys sell out, you know, a soccer stadium. You do.
Yep.
You know, you have so many fans crowding around you. I mean, I think like Froch had to be surprised to have like the Super Six finale like in a ballroom, you know, where it should have been in a soccer stadium, you know. So it would be interesting to see, you know, Broner if he would try to say, well, I've got all the leverage, I'm with HBO, and if Burns would buy into that, or if Burns would say, look, we can do a huge gate here, we can probably do some good money with Sky and do it on pay per view. And it would be something, again, I always kind of look to the thing, because Broner is so connected to Floyd, and people are going to be comparing those legacies. What's the thing that Floyd wouldn't do? I almost kind of look to see that might be the thing that Broner would do in order to define himself. We'll see.
There's a lot of fighters coming out of the UK, too, man, that are just, you know, fun to watch. Like, we talk about characters in the sport, you know, and the UK are really making that up, you know. They're really bringing their A game. Like Tyson Fury, that guy's he's hilarious. Like he just tweeted out right now, I was asked today by a Dutchman, are you from England? And did I know the cocky motherfucker Tyson Fury? And Tyson he laughs out loud and he says, you're looking at him, bitch. That's just great, man, you know. So there's a piece of the puzzle, you know, and for anybody that wants to, you know, that's what you're saying about the whole UK fighters wanting to come over here. I'm like, why? What is so big over here? You know, it, to me, it looks like the UK fighters are treated like gods, the way that they should be treated. You know, they're put at a pedestal, you know, at a higher escalon, where the USA fans, we don't do that. We don't do that for our fighters. You know, we had a last caller was talking about what does the African-American fighter need to do to get some respect? I don't know. Maybe start looking over to what the UK fans do for their fighters.
Yeah.
Anyways, brother, thanks for calling in. I'm going to put you back on
hold. Yeah, I just want to say, Gabe, keep up the good work. I know you came on the Steve Bunn show and educating us about performance-enhancing drugs, and I think you should continue that work because I think sport needs to know what's really going on. So keep up with that, and I'll keep in touch with you on Twitter.
No, man, I'm glad you finally were able to get through. You know, it's always nice to connect with people from the UK, and you're always so cool on Twitter. So I'm glad you finally got through. I guess the Viber really works, and
yeah.
Never thought I'd say that to another man.
Yeah, man, and hey, thanks for supporting, and keep coming back on.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, man. For those of you guys that are listening, following us on Twitter, that is, I hope I don't mess up his name now that he called in. But that's Zubair and then underscore Motat. So Zubair underscore Mohtat. He's actually really one of the good ones on Twitter. One of the people that interacts, he always has good questions.
Yeah.
And knows how to just stay respectful and like a human being. You know, he talks to us on here the way he talks to me on Twitter. Really appreciate it. You got to call back in.
Yeah, definitely. Let's patch in another fight fan here on Leaving the Ring, see if they want to talk some boxing with us.
Actually, Toriano Johnson is in the wings, the 954 area code.
I believe we have Mr. Johnson here on Leaving the Ring with us. What's up, brother? You're on live right now with us. Are you there?
Good day, everybody up there. This is Toriano Johnson.
Thanks for coming on, Toriano. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
My name is Gabriel Montoya. I write with MaxBoxing.com and then also a co-host here on Leave It in the Ring. And this is my co-host, David Duenas of Leave It in the Ring.
Okay, good. Nice to hear from you guys.
So let's jump right in. We actually never had to talk before. So usually when we have people on for the first time, we like to kind of introduce them to our listeners. So if you could, we would start at the beginning. If you could tell us first, how you got into boxing? What was your first experience heading into a boxing gym, and why did you get into boxing?
Well, first of all, my name is Toriano Johnson. I come from a Christian family back in the Bahamas. I was first introduced to boxing through a cousin of mine. He's well known in the boxing arena, Ray Miner Jr. from the Bahamas. He's formerly known as the Calypso Boy, and it was from then that my dad had got involved, and they had pushed me real hard. Winning many tournaments in the Caribbean, I moved on to train and live in Cuba for 8 years, qualifying myself to head to the 2008 Beijing Olympics, where I had won my first two fights, and I had lost to the hometown fighter from China, finishing number 5 at the Beijing Olympics, now a professional fighter, 13-0, and looking to make that 14-0 come next week.
You've been... You're 29 years old. You fought really all over the world stage. What is your take on the politics in the game? It seems like things are changing a little bit. I know the AIBA is trying to get this World Series of Boxing going. It's kind of international league. For you, politically speaking, are the politics in amateur boxing just as bad, like Olympic boxing? Like you're saying, you lost a hometown decision. Or is it equal in professional boxing?
Well, you know, it is very difficult to even discuss a situation like that. You know, me not being in the political arena, but I do have some details and information on that. The amateur ranks right now is getting ready to turn the amateurs more or less into professionals. I believe it's going to be conflicting for the promoters today in the professional rank to compete with such a new breed of boxers being captured by the amateur league before they're able to turn pro and being able to sign with good, experienced professional boxing promoters. So I think, you know, more of a concern for the promoters, not more or less for the fighters, because I believe it's in our best interest that all of this is happening. But I believe
right.
that the promoters out there today are going to have a very hard challenge dealing with this amateur league coming up.
I agree with that. I feel very like-minded, because it also kind of changes the game in that, like you said, like the hometown decision, and those happen all over the place. But say now that Aiba is a promoter, you're going to kind of want to sign with those guys through the Olympics to make sure you get that gold medal. I think that's what it possibly could turn into, and then they can market you as a gold medal winner. I felt like I almost saw that this last Olympics. But back to you specifically, what is it about boxing that you enjoy? What is it that really drew you in and kept you there?
Oh, well, yes. Yeah, so, you know, I'm an athletic young man, you know, all around. I was a very good swimmer. I'm still a good swimmer. I'm still a good 400-meter runner. I love to play volleyball, and I was very good at it. Even baseball, I'm pretty good at. But it was boxing that captivated me and showed me that I was better at doing this, you know. And I believe I do have a knack for it, you know, of taking blows. A lot of guys said, you know, Toriano, you're not much of an intelligent fighter. You're a dumb boxer. And I beg to differ on that. But it is said that is the case, and I believe I have a knack for taking blows and giving blows and very good at doing it. As far as being technical, I'm still working on that. But, hey, you give me a blow, don't expect me to go down. That is not possible.
You've worked with some of the best guys in the world, too. I mean, you said you spent all that time in Cuba. Can you talk to me about that experience, working with some of the top-level guys over there and just within that system? I imagine you got to see Guillermo Rigondeaux and a lot of top names.
Oh, yes, I must say that it was a phenomenal experience for me living down there and training with the best boxers known to the amateur ranks. For the likes of Irlandi Lara, I was able to step into the ring with him in his hometown, and we had put on gloves and we had sparred for a few rounds. Udell Johnson, another good boxer who had went to the Olympic. I think he was a bronze or a silver medalist in 2004. I had a phenomenal bout with him. Rigondeaux, I can't explain. I believe I have the utmost most respect for the young man who is my senior, but he's an extremely good fighter. It was a moment of my life that I can never turn the hands of time back, but my memories will always go back to know that those were the times that Toriano was really getting into boxing and understanding how serious it is to be dedicated to the sport.
I had the pleasure of watching Guillermo work in the gym when he was up here at Wildcard, and it's just, you know, it's like watching an artist work. You know, his footwork.
Oh yes.
All of it. It's unlike anybody. I don't think people really, because he hasn't been pro that long, and there's some derision about him that he's boring or this and that. I don't find him boring at all. I mean, what are your thoughts on him specifically? Specifically.
I think if you want anybody's opinion, you need to get it from me, because I'm a guy, I do not like any boxer. I don't care how much you weigh. You could even weigh 5 pounds to 2,000 pounds. I do not like you. You put on a glove, you put on a glove, whether you're training or not. I don't like you. You're my enemy, you're my arch rival. But as Rigondeaux, he has my utmost most respect. I believe the man turns the sport into an art. He's very intelligent. I see there's nobody out there who can compare himself on the ranks that Rigondeaux is at. He is boxing. I give him all credit and props for that. Way to go, Rigondeaux. You are pretty much my idol.
Wow. Wow. Those are strong words, man.
Yeah.
Big
yeah.
Talk to me about you got this fight coming up, Willie Fortune. What do you know about Willie? He's an undefeated guy. Just like yourself, is there something extra in facing somebody that's undefeated that has just as much to lose as you do?
Yeah, I don't think we have much to lose. I think I have more to lose. I'm a better fighter, and I think he knows that. But not to be boastful, you know, Willie Fortune, you know, what do I know about him? Like I said, you know, there's not much you can find out from a person just watching one fight. But I know this. He have a head, a heart, two arms, and two legs. I ain't got nothing to be afraid about. Even if he comes in there with two horns and a tail, I'm still going to take him out.
Do you, you know, you probably know more about Willie Fortune than I do. I mean, he's, you know, an older guy, 31. You know, that's certainly not ancient. I'm older than he is. But he's out of Detroit, so we know he's going to be, you know, kind of a rugged guy. He's probably seen a lot of different styles. Have you seen him specifically? Do you know any specifics about his style at all? Or does it even matter to you?
Well, you know, it does matter. And, you know, I do my research. And really, I've been to a few of your fights. And really, you don't look that good. In fact, you're not that good. I know what Willie's going to do. I can tell you right now what Willie's going to do. Willie's going to come into that ring. He's going to throw a bunch of jabs. He's going to be wild, and he's going to try to stay far away from me as possible. Wow. He's not going to try to let me get in at all because he knows once I'm inside, it's going to be devastating and life-threatening.
That probably sounds about accurate. Somebody else is texting me about Willie Fortune, and they just kind of described him exactly how you just did. Like, he's kind of a jabber, kind of a mover, and he's not going to be physically as strong as Johnson, is what they said.
No, he won't be. I don't care. Even a miracle come down from heaven can try to put that name in. It ain't going to happen.
Yeah, you can even just see him. In your last couple fights, you've been fighting at super middleweight. Is that where you're going to settle in at, or do you feel more like a middle, which is kind of where you've been throughout your career?
Oh, well, at this point right now, we are campaigning at the middleweight. But, hey, boxing is a business. We go where the money lies. And at this moment, we are good at 160, but 154 with Canelo Alvarez and all of those other big names out there. Be aware, Toriano Johnson is here.
You seem like a pretty opinionated guy, so and we were talking like politics and everything before. As you're kind of heading up to the next level, probably looking at contendership and title shots, you know, throughout 2013 or heading more into 2014, a big subject in these big fights now is this random drug testing, or some people call it Olympic-style drug testing. Coming from the amateur system, you spend a lot of time with the top-level amateurs and everything. What are your thoughts about adopting the system that they use in the amateurs, you know, the USADA system, to the pros? Do you think it's something that really needs to happen?
Oh, my. You asked a question that is so needed to be answered. I believe it is it's so necessary for them to have that program initiated into this boxing program at this moment, because right now, not just boxing, but all sports are being found guilty of drug enhancement. And I think it's unfair for us, men and women out there who are being fair, who are training the right way, to be given such a raw deal on fighting fighters that are enhanced with chemicals. I believe WADA and all the other drug organizations should take part in this and do random drug testing. I think it is necessary, and it's imperative that they do this. As far as how do I look at my future in the upcoming year, I'll tell you this much. If I cannot be the world champion today, I do not need to be boxing. I've been boxing for quite some time. I have went to all of the amateur levels, as far as world championship, junior cadet, and the Olympics. I have had over 285 Olympic class fights. I am now 13-0 as a professional. Three of my opponents were able to escape a knockout. I should have been fighting for a world title long ago. So as far as me fighting for a world title this year, I'll be fighting for a world title in the next few months, if not weeks.
Wow.
I'm excited, man. I'm surprised we haven't had a chance to talk, and I'm really glad that we finally got to. You're a very intelligent guy, and I like opinionated people that are unafraid to speak their minds. You know,
your confidence just comes right through too. I like that a lot. You know, we were talking a little earlier about fighters that need to have a certain type of confidence, a certain type of belief, and yours just it just shines right through.
Well, you know, I'm just being original, and if you do take a retake on my history, you know, yes, I am opinionated, and I speak my mind, and I speak my heart. If you don't like it, that is your right. You know, and I believe whatever I don't like and whatever I like is my right. You can't take that away from me.
Absolutely. Have
your opinions, and I have mine.
I'm curious, too. You jump right on the drug testing question. Do you feel even with that Olympic testing system that's in place in the amateurs, do you think a lot of people get through anyways?
I do believe so. I honestly do believe so as, not say a victim, but as one who had an experience of knowing, of believing of things that had happened. I believe, you know, in any case, in anything you do, in business, relationship, whatever, you're going to have holes that people are able to slip in. So, but hey, if we can minimize it, I think that would be a great thing. You know, even if we do have this program come on board as one of the mandatory drug random testing, I believe, yes, you're going to have holes then. But hey, let's try and minimize it as much as possible.
Right.
I agree. It's your health and safety. That's what it's all about, you know.
Yes.
It's a dangerous sport enough as it is, you know. It doesn't have to be any worse. That's how I look at it. Well, Mr. Johnson, I really appreciate you coming on the show. We have another guest coming in here in about a minute. But are you on Twitter, or is there any place where we can find you that fans can interact with you?
In fact, I'm going to be on Twitter. My manager, I'm going to be on Twitter in the next couple of minutes. We're going to do an account, and yes, I'm so excited to get on the ball, and I'm so sorry you guys got hanging me up. I'm worse than Michael Jackson. You put the mic in my hand, I'm not going to give it back. But you said I only have a minute, so yeah, therefore I have to go. But hey, listen, you guys can reach me out on Twitter. My name is Toriano Dexter Johnson from the Bahamas. Google me, YouTube me. Write comments. Let me know how awful I am in the ring. Call me a dog or whatever you want, but you know, just tell the truth.
Absolutely, man. Well, when you get on Twitter, let us know so we can follow you.
Oh, no doubt. I definitely will.
All right, brother.
Well, definitely, this will be the first of many interviews, I have a feeling, Mr. Johnson. So thank you so much, and you enjoy your Friday, man. Good luck next week.
God bless you all, and y'all have an awesome week as well.
All right. Back at you. And that was Toriano Johnson. He will be fighting at middleweight against Willie Fortune at the Morongo Casino next week at the Cabazon, California. I actually might be out there for that one.
I want to see what Johnson puts out on Twitter. You know, he's got a lot to say, man. Really interesting stuff that he throws out there, you know. So hopefully he's as entertaining as Tyson Fury is on Twitter, you know, as he was here on this interview. He did a great interview, you know.
I forgot to ask him. He got hit on a few things, but when I was in St. Lucia for that Ward fight, it was a trip because you wouldn't think like the Caribbean. I don't really think of it as like a boxing hotbed or anything.
No,
you know,
right?
But they were. I mean, everybody. Maybe it was like there was not a lot going on the island, but everybody and their brother cared about that fight. And I would ask people like when I got to the fight. I mean, we're there, you know, in the middle of like a cricket field, like a cricket stadium. And about 3,000 something people there, 3,500 people. That was a good crowd. But it started to rain. And I turned around, like, look at the crowd. They weren't covered, you know, only the arena was covered. And even press row, we had to, like, kind of get underneath the cover of the ring. But I turned around, and everybody's just, like, got, like, an umbrella. They're all, like, ready. You know, all the hoods have gone up. And they didn't move. They just sat there and watched all the boxing because the fights kept going on. And I talked to people, and, like, apparently, like, the Caribbean and, like, this guy was saying, like, the Bahamas – they dig their boxing. I don't know what it is, but it's something that's like really ingrained in the culture, and they love it as a sport. I don't know. It's maybe they don't have ESPN, they don't have a lot of choices, you know. But it's kind of nice to see that boxing is so alive and well down there, and Toriano Johnson keeping it going. He's a trip, man. Really cool guy.
It is really quick in the news out there. It's being tweeted out that Austin Trout and Saul Canelo Alvarez is a done deal. The official announcement will be done, be out soon at the press conference in Los Angeles. So we'll find a little bit more about that. I haven't received anything from Golden Boy saying it's a done deal, but
went on that list, that email list. That's interesting. Well, I mean, Steve actually wrote that. Remember that in the waiting game that Schaefer, if he was about ready to just announce a fight May 4th for Canelo because he's tired of waiting for Mayweather. Gets curiouser and curiouser as that fight gets closer and closer and no announcements made, you know?
Yep. Yeah. You know what? Big ups for Canelo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, taking this fight, you know, we've been waiting and wanting to see him step up, be a responsible junior middleweight champion. And that is a responsible move, man, is by facing Austin Trout, who's well-deserved. It's a well-deserved option for Austin Trout. He beat, you know, Miguel Cotto. It was a clear shot out in that bout between himself, Austin Trout, and Miguel Cotto. So it only made sense that he got the opportunity to have a big money fight with the star power draw of Canelo Alvarez. A lot of folks thinking that Canelo Alvarez will outpoint him, outbeat him. And then you got the other half thinking that Trout may be a little bit too big and too polished for Saul Canelo. To me, it's a really good fight. It's a two prime fighters. These are the type of fights that need to be made, you know, whether or not two guys in their prime, two guys, you know, that really have a lot to lose in either case of who wins in this fight. You know, this is a major step up. Not a major step up in stage-wise for Austin Trout, a major step up for Canelo Alvarez in terms of opponents. This is a good fight, really good fight. This fight is a done deal. I'm excited. This is a fight I am really excited to see and watch.
Yeah, it's like justice is served. I'm kind of stunned, you know. I think it's a great fight. Austin is very deserving. And talk about, you know, a gentleman of the sport. He seems like a genuinely cool guy. If you follow his Twitter feed, he doesn't really like – he'll retweet stuff. He doesn't get into Twitter wars or anything like that, but he's always talking about playing video games with his son or out doing some sort of community work. Or he just seems to be a positive person. I really appreciate that. I like people that do that, and particularly champions and who are ambassadors for the sport. They're the best that we have to offer. So I think it's fantastic that he gets a shot like this. I think he's got a really good chance to win. Probably going to lean in his direction when it comes time to make an official pick. And you got to give it up to Canelo and to Golden Boy. They said they were going to take this risk, and now they're taking it. And you know, if Canelo wants that Mayweather fight, which I don't understand what weight it would be at, but they want that fight. You have to think. This is going to be some sort of a measuring stick. If Canelo can handle a guy that can box as well as Austin Trout, I know it's a totally different style, but still, I think it's going to go a long way to proving that he should be in the ring with Mayweather, because maybe the style is different, but it's equally difficult, I think. A southpaw mover who's a tall guy who boxes with a high IQ, but he's in the physical prime of his life, as opposed to Floyd, who may not be in the physical, he's certainly not at the top of the hill anymore. I don't know where he is on his way down to the bottom of it, but
right.
He's certainly not at the top of it anymore. And he's also physically not as big and strong, I don't think, as Canelo. Maybe as strong. Floyd's a lot more strong than people think, but you know, I think you get the point. It's a very interesting fight, and props to Golden Boy and all involved if this is real news and actually happening.
Yeah, this is a good start for them, you know. I mean, and the direction that fight fans want them to go, you know, is by putting up the best fights available and possible out there. This is a great direction for them to lead. Going with the app, too, really quick, just throwing this out there. You can also tweet us from the app. You don't have to leave the app. And while you're following us in the mobile app, you download it and you go to the tweet feed. You can see myself or Gable tweeting whatever we tweet out. You can actually interact with us, just to throw that out there as well. Fight fans, you want to call in, you certainly can. We're waiting for Josecito Lopez to give us a ring here on Leaving the Ring so we can talk some boxing with him. But if you want to call in, and let's start up a discussion here, 347-215-7598. I know my co-host has Broner winning by the 8th round. I hope it lasts a little longer. You know, Gavin Reese really, if he has a chance, it's to jump on Broner, stay on Broner, and not allow Broner to dictate and have the ring general shift. We saw what happened with Antonio DeMarco, which was weird. Not weird in the sense that he was getting dominated, but it was weird in the sense that for DeMarco, I would say it was weird for him, was that Broner was fighting DeMarco's fight, not a Broner fight. And I think that surprised a lot of other challengers out there that were witnessing that fight between Adrian Broner and Antonio DeMarco, because the boxer normally wants to be on his bike pedal. He wants to counter. He wants to make you miss shots so that he can capitalize on that. Broner didn't do that. He stayed in the pocket, you know, and he made it a phone booth fight, and he measured his punches, which was just from the elbow to the chest, and he was still able to get some real real strong power behind that. You know, a lot of times a boxer needs some distance. They need arm length. You know, they need that arm distance in order to really turn their punches. Broner impressed me, man. He showed a lot. He showed a diversity with DeMarco. Was it the smartest way to fight DeMarco? If you go back and you look at that, and if he had laid out that game plan to us, we would have said that's a dumb game plan. You know, that's not the game plan you want to do. You don't want to go in the mouth of the lion. But it worked for him. He was in the mouth of the lion, and he was being a surgeon. He was being a dentist. He was pulling the teeth out of that lion, and it was great to see. Gavin Reese, you know, he's got to jump on him, but he's got to have – it's. I always say this even about Floyd Mayweather opponents. You don't go in with a plan A. You got to have a plan A, B, and C. You know, and this is starting to be evident for Broner. You have to have a layer of plans in order to be effective against Broner, because you can see he can adjust, he can fight your game plan, and he can fight his game plan. So you're going in there blind, in my opinion. You're going in there to a fight that's pretty much you're blind, and I think that's perfect the way that Adrian Broner threw it out there. You can watch a million tapes on me, but until you get in the ring, you're not going to know what I'm going to do. I got allergies bad, man. I can't even breathe right now. Gabriel? Put himself on mute. Does this every time. If you're listening live here on Leaving the Ring. Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring? You certainly can. I don't know what happened to my co-host. Are you there, Gabriel? Did I lose you?
Nope. I was actually just securing a guest. So as soon as we get Mr. Lopez on and off, we're gonna call Main Events, and Kathy Duva is gonna come on and talk to us.
Oh, right.
Yeah, she's. I asked her if she'd like to do kind of give her opinions on what happened in New York with Garcia Morales too, as kind of an objective outside person, and just really more not that case specifically, but just the testing issue as part of a group that doesn't really do the testing. And kind of is leaving it up to the commissions. I want her take. I think she's an intelligent person that's a smart promoter that really gets things. And I'm curious to see how she feels about it. So we'll be doing that like 12:30 or 1 as soon as we're done and clear of our next guest.
I did text them and let them know that we are waiting for Josecito Lopez. He was supposed to call in at noon. It's about 12:11, so we're still waiting for him.
So he's fired is basically what you're saying.
It's a beautiful day out there. I'm sitting here in my office and I'm looking outside. I'm like that little dog that sits by the window going like, please let me outside. I want to run around. That's pretty much right now what I'm looking at. It's beautiful out there, man. It's a perfect day to barbecue for the lead up for the Friday night fights. You want to talk about? Let's talk about the Friday night fights here, Gabriel. What do you think? You're having Devin Rodriguez. He's getting back into the ring. He's fighting a guy with a last name that I am not even going to attempt to try to pronounce. But, I don't know a whole lot about his opponent, you know. Do you know how to say his last name?
I'm looking it up right now. Sorry, I'm it's middle of the day, so I'm a little barraged. I'm looking it up right now so I can.
It's good to see Rodriguez back in, too, you know. And he had his fight, which is a guy we were talking about a little earlier, Austin Trout. You know, he didn't, he wasn't successful in that fight. So
I don't think he fought with his personality in that fight.
No, he didn't. I think Trout was able to bring him to his personality. You know, and sometimes fighters, man, they just fight to the level of the competition for some reason. You know, really don't know how to switch up those gears, have that emergency gear.
No, yeah, I think, well, he, you know, guys like Rodriguez, who were kind of like, he's more of an action fighter, you know, he's always kind of caught between, I thought. He didn't know if he wanted to be a boxer, didn't know if, he'd box a little bit, but mainly he was kind of an action slugger. And then I think with the Wolak fights, you know, especially moving up higher in weight, he started to box a lot more than he ever really had, and kind of punching in spots. With Trout, it was like he really tried to box with a boxer, and that's what made that fight really uninteresting. Because Trout, I think people don't realize that, well, maybe they do, but When you have guys that are natural counterpunchers, and I kind of think of Trout not as a natural counterpuncher, but as a natural boxer with more a counterpuncher sensibility at times, it comes down to strength of will. You know, like when we see this Rigo versus Donaire fight, it's going to come down to strength of will. Who wants to change up their plan and lead first? You know, if they both come out looking to counter, it's going to be a waiting game. It's going to be a feint game, trying to lead each other into traps and moments where they want to do things. And then we'll go from there. And so I think when Rodriguez tried to box with Trout, Trout said, you know, well, he maintained his discipline, maintained his game plan, and kept boxing. And Rodriguez never really got out of his game plan, which really wasn't working all that well, and instead tried to slug. And so we made for a bad fight. Against this guy, Tadu Anipa, wow, say that fast five times. This guy's name, it just gets me. I'm like bigger and like looking at it, and it's just there's no. How about we'll just call him Comanche Boy because that's his nickname.
That's his nickname, Comanche Boy. Yeah.
That's hot. He's 34 years old. He's 31-0, 23 knockouts, one draw. But you know, come on, let's look at the opposition. You know, his last fight was against Gundrick King at the Comanche Nation Casino in Lawton, Oklahoma. Never really heard of that guy. He fought a guy like five fights ago. He fought Thomas Longacre at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. And this is kind of crazy. This is classic boxing in Oklahoma. This guy is like, you know, 31-0, 23 knockouts. You know, a few fights before that, he only had like, you know, 20 knockouts, 28 wins. He fights Thomas Longacre, who's making his pro debut. He's a former kickboxing champion. Now becoming a pro boxer.
Right.
So, and they put this on. This is it's all Oklahoma record. It's just so, you know, built. It might as well be a building, his resume. I think that Delvin's probably going to go right through him and kind of expose the level of class, you know, because even if you don't think like Delvin Rodriguez is a world beater, he's a top contender. He's a guy that fought like the best of the best.
Exactly. That's the thing. I mean, this is Comanche Boy's chance of really showing whether or not it's a patent record or he's waiting for his moment to shine, you know. A big step up. A lot of the times the odds are against you just because if you're fighting fish, you're going to end up not being able to swim with the big fishes.
That scared me. I was trying to pull up the Max Boxing schedule, and it was like, your website is not available. Like, this happened the last time I printed some inflammatory stuff about Golden Boy. I was like, uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Also in the fight schedule, underneath that is, in support is Bayon Jargal, 17-3-3, versus Chris Howard, 14-2-1.
I haven't seen Bayon Jargal for in a while, you know. I don't know what happened there, but
it's kind of a grim Friday night fight. You know, I got to be honest. I'm not terribly excited. I think, you know, Yuri Boy Campos that same night versus Gabriel Martinez could be interesting. I mean, this is just a novelty. But Yuri Boy Campos, 117-1 versus Gabriel Martinez, 27-5-1. Like, Martinez doesn't even have as many knockouts as, you know, as many fights as Campos.
I know, man.
Wait, 117-1. It's like, how old is this guy? You know, it's crazy to think. Like, you look at like Oscar and Tito. Like, they, you know, they both beat him. They wouldn't rematch each other. Like, this guy's still going. You know, and they're just like, like Tito's like, well, I'm gonna turn 40 this year. If Oscar wants to fight again, I'll do it. You know, Oscar is 40 now. It's kind of crazy. End of an era. I guess we can keep going into the fight schedule while we wait for Lopez. And as soon as I'm done with that, we can call in Kathy Duva.
Let's call in Kathy Duva now. You know, I don't think – I think they're running behind because the gym time and stuff, which is fine. I did text them. They haven't texted me back. So let's – I'm interested to hear what
they're
Kathy has to say.
Henry Ramirez, Ciroc time. You know, they're just kind of moving nice and slow. Kind of getting it done. Yeah, let's see. Let's see what we do.
Broner, really quick. You know, you threw out 8 rounds. God, I'm gonna go 10 rounds, man. I think he stops reads in 10 rounds in this.
You got 10 rounds. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm pulling up the number for you so that I can and we'll probably have to go to the office and say, you know, identify ourselves and get Kathy. during the show while we were going, they called me back. I had a question about New York promoting, and she could answer it, but they got back to me today. So
you're going to be calling in Kathy Duva right now for main events.
There's the number. It is texted. It is away.
Uh-huh. And I'm typing it in, and Kathy's been around. She's been around in the sport for quite some time, and you know the times that we've had her on, she's always opinionated and insightful of what she tells us. So should be fun. Kathy Duva right now here on Leaving the Ring Radio. And then hopefully we can get Josecito Lopez. I did text his people. Henry Ramirez, let him know.
Main Events, Alexa speaking.
Hi, Liz. This is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya from Leaving the Ring Radio. We're told that we can speak to Kathy Duva.
Hold on. I'm sorry. Can I have your name again?
This is David Duenas and my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya, here on Leaving the Ring Radio.
We had just called a few minutes ago and asked if she would do a live interview, and she was like, yeah, just give us a call when you're ready.
Okay, sure, yeah. No problem. Hold on one second.
Thanks. Taking you inside the life of a boxing writer. I actually make that call sometimes.
Hello?
Hello, is this Kathy?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Kathy. This is Dave Duenas, and of course you know my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya, here on Leaving the Ring Radio. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
We're doing good. We're over here sitting and staring outside our office windows here, waiting for this show to end so that we can go outside and play.
Well, you can go outside. I'm in New Jersey.
You're not even talking about the weather. I'm just kidding. I don't even know anything about New Jersey or what it's like hanging out.
Well, it's cold here.
Well, it's right here. That's right here. So let me. I'm curious. What I was actually calling you about, and you guys were gracious enough to call me back about, was the Morales Garcia 2 case, which is kind of fascinating to me. I think boxing fans, because we're trying to figure out what exactly happened there. You know, how a guy could test positive with an esteemed agency like USADA, and twice, and then still be allowed to fight. And I was. My question for you was: are promoters like? In your licensing agreement, you know, for you to get your promoter's license, do you have to agree to, like, divulge that kind of information to a – say if you found out one of your guys is juicing or something like that, or there was a health issue that may jeopardize the fight, but your guy could kind of go through it, like, say, a broken hand or whatever. Are you obligated to tell a commission about that?
You know, that's probably a better question for our attorney. He's much better with rules than I am. I would not put a fighter in the ring if he's incapacitated in some way. There's certainly we can't do that. We wouldn't do that.
Right.
If we know someone is injured and shouldn't be fighting, you know, we're not going to do that. And I'm pretty sure, you know, we are making representations at least that to our knowledge that they're fit to fight. They have to make those representations to us first. It's really more about them making representations to us, and then if we have knowledge that something is wrong, of course, you know, we've got to take whatever steps we have to take to ensure the fighter's well-being. But as far as the, you know, that's part of the problem with the testing for PEDs. It's a problem I think it has to be solved by the commissions, because we're dealing with people from all over the world fighting. We're dealing with different jurisdictions. You know, unlike every other sport, the sanctioning bodies and whatnot for boxing, you know, depending on the state you're in, that state is in charge. It's not like there's one central U.S. Agency or commission. It's every state has their own commission, and that's what regulates boxing. Amateur sports is regulated by one worldwide body, so everybody can get together and agree on the rules and then implement them and follow them. It's not quite so simple with this sport, because every state in the United States has their own sanctioning body. Some Indian tribes have their own sanctioning bodies. And then every country you deal with has their own sanctioning bodies. Hmm. Some have more than one. So.
Yeah, it's. Do you think it's possible a universal testing program that everybody kind of agrees to?
I think that's really hard to do. For, again, a host of reasons. This isn't amateur sports. There is not one group that makes the rules.
Yeah.
There is not the kind, you know, there are so many levels of this. Fighters who are at the, you know, the very bottom of boxing's food chain, the fighters who are fighting in four-round fights, their purses do not even equal the amount that it would cost to. How do you test them year-round? There's no guarantee they're going to be active year-round.
Right.
How do you test them? How do you test a four-round fighter? Why would a four-round fighter be entitled to less protection than the guy in the main event? And I don't have any of these answers. I have a lot of questions. And that's why I think, you know, there are state agencies set up, and that's their job to figure that stuff out. And I think we have to leave it to them.
Well, I think that I guess is probably my problem, is leaving it to them is a little dangerous. That's just my opinion, but I mean, because it just seems like it's particularly in Nevada. And I don't want to put you in a position where you have to really comment on this, because you're a promoter that has to do business. But with their ratios and the twoies for testosterone and things like that, especially when we're now finding out that a guy will have a twoie for testosterone, a therapeutic use exemption, and we'll find it out after the fight happened, I think that's incredibly dangerous. And that, to me, that's an example of leaving it to the commission. But the
problem is that in this country, every state is sovereign to the extent that they regulate this sport with their own athletic commission. I can't tell them what to do.
Right, right.
And USADA can't tell them what to do either.
Yeah, it's true.
I can't make every athletic commission in this country agree on any standard protocol. So if one guy is coming from Texas and another guy's coming from California and they're going to go fight in New Jersey, you tell me whose rules they're going to follow.
Right. I mean, I think at this point it's probably, I don't know if you'd agree with this, that it's going to probably remain a fighter-driven thing, and the way Floyd does it, or Nonito Donaire, who's now actually starting to ask his opponents, before he wasn't, but now he's, I think, making it mandatory. And Tim Bradley, I believe, is doing the same, that the opponent has to join him in, you know, USADA or VADA testing. I think, you know, Donaire is going with one, and Bradley's attending to go with the other.
If the commission doesn't find out what the results were?
Well, in the case of USADA, exactly. In the case of VADA, though, to their credit, they did it the right way, and they informed the commission. I mean, would you endorse that if one of your fighters was saying, look, I want to do it this way, and we're going to, you know, put the commission in the loop so it's going to be done the right way?
At this point, our attorney has advised us that that's not a good idea. And the reasons for that are, I don't think that fighters are even remotely aware of what it is they can use and not use. Things that are completely innocent seeming to them could trigger a positive test. You've seen the chaos that's ensued when this has happened. And you've seen that fighters have tested positive and fought anyway. Keep testing them until they pass. It's ridiculous, to tell you the truth. I'm sitting on the outside watching this and saying this is self-inflicted chaos. Because
yeah.
How many guys, perhaps completely innocently, ingested something that triggers a positive response? It takes Olympic athletes, Olympic level athletes, people that are being tested like this all the time. There are procedures in place, not just get on the phone and talk for an hour about it, real procedures about teaching them what they're supposed to take or not take or what to avoid. They have coaches who are sophisticated in this area. They have teams around them that are sophisticated in these areas. We're telling boxers who are going to get maybe the benefit of a one-hour conversation on the phone to put their entire careers at risk in some cases and hope they don't make a mistake. And while on one hand, you know, you don't want to give somebody an unfair advantage, and I obviously agree no one should have an unfair advantage. On the other hand, a lot of people get harmed, not the least of which are the guys who fight on the undercard who get their fight canceled, who've put weeks and weeks into training and perhaps laid out expenses there are so many people down this line that are going to be injured if somebody makes a mistake, that I feel that that there has to be, and perhaps it's the Association of Boxing Commissions in the U.S. where it should start, there's got to be some agreement on some level of what is possible, what is affordable. Again, why should the guy in the main event have better protection than a four-round fighter? But you realize that at this point, testing for a four-round fighter is impossible. Some of these four-round fights don't get made until a few days before the show or a week or two before.
Right.
How do you do that testing with them? How do you protect them? There's a lot of questions here. And I think that people should not be using these drugs. I think they're harming themselves. I think they're harming the sport. I think they're harming the, for lack of a better word, that's not sporting.
I agree.
I think some people are extending their careers to unnatural lengths, and I think it's going to harm them big time in the long run, in many ways, and I think it's wrong. But I also know that you have to come up with a practical solution that actually works rather than one guy who happens to be at the very top of the food chain and really rich and has million-dollar purses can demand that his opponent be tested, but nobody else gets tested.
Yeah, I've always kind of been bothered by that it's, I like the way Donera's done it, where it's an offer, it's not mandatory, it's not like singling a guy out and saying, if you don't do it, you're dirty. I thought that was kind of awful what happened with Pacquiao. I think that's exactly the mob mentality we need to avoid. But I think there's a middle ground. I think something, like you said, the ABC, maybe the Promoters Association, maybe everybody kind of sits down and goes, all right, let's at least have this talk. And that way we just don't keep extending it fight to fight and argument to argument, but rather
understanding is the ABC is having that conversation. So I think that has begun. That is my understanding of it. And again, when you talk about what we would like in a world where everything is perfect and everything could be the way we'd like, it would be that every fighter who boxes gets tested on a regular basis by somebody who is not their promoter, who is not made a deal with their promoter that they won't reveal the results. That, of course, it would have to be that the commission knows. Commissions have been successful testing people after fights for other kinds of drugs. I realize these drugs are different, but that's the challenge. That's the problem. How do you test people at that low level and the people at the higher level? How do you test a guy if let's say a fight falls out 2 weeks beforehand and you bring somebody in?
True. That's the thing. It's tough. I mean, they do. They have caught. I think Andrew Hernandez was a case that was recently. It was a 6-round fight, and the guy gets caught. I mean, they do. It does happen. But I get your point. It's tough.
Well, you certainly can't test the 6-rounders for 2 months prior to the fight.
No, that's the thing. Well, I mean, you could.
Even if you can afford it.
If a guy's training, but that's the thing. It comes down to affordability and there's just so many. There's so many fighters out there. It's a monumental thing. I mean, if it's a guy that covers it, I always kind of look at it like it is a giant mountain, But I'm glad that this conversation started.
Yeah, no, I do too. And I think, like anything else with progress over time, the testing that's done now routinely could not have been afforded 20 years ago.
Right.
And I know that the time will come, and I think the affordability of the testing is a big, big factor here. And I think the thing that troubles me about, let's let fighters do it voluntarily or let's let promoters impose this. Well, I do believe that there should be equal protection under the laws. That is the law of this country. That is what the state commissions have to live with.
Right.
Everybody has to be treated the same. And there is not equal protection when you have classes of fighters who get protected and other classes who don't. And as always, it's the guys at the bottom of the food chain that are going to suffer the most because you can't test them. So they're taking their chances. And then if the guy who's in the main event, if he comes up dirty, well, the guy in the 8-rounders, the guy is not going to work that night, along with the guys in the 4-rounders and the 6-rounders and all the people, who are employed by this business of ours. It is a business. And while I would not put money ahead of people's safety ever, the fact is it's not practical. And if the guys in the main event are getting tested, everybody should be getting tested.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, let me ask you, first of all, I love the whole NBC Sports edition. It's great. I think it was something that boxing fans want it, need it, and it's coming along fantastic. It makes my Saturdays even that much more exciting.
Oh, happy to hear that.
But let me ask, how are the numbers doing? Are they fair? Are they meeting the expectation you guys were looking for, or is there still a struggle of trying to get viewers to sit down on a Saturday on NBC Sports?
It's a combination. We'll start with the NBC afternoon show that we did. We exceeded their expectations by a multiple of four. They were hoping a million people would watch on a Demick and Cunningham, and by the time the show ended, there were 3.9 million people watching. That's double the audience that watches an HBO fight. So the biggest HBO fight of the year, actually. So that was a smashing success, and there's going to be more of those. That turned out to be just exceeded everyone's wildest expectations, so we're really happy about that. The Saturday evening shows, we've found ourselves head-to-head with shows on HBO and Showtime for almost every show we've done except the first one. That is a blessing and a curse. Everybody's talking about fighting. People are in front of their television sets. There's a lot of Twitter. People are watching fights now, and they're on Twitter. So if people are watching the HBO broadcast and people are going, hey, look what just happened on NBC, they're changing their channels. We're seeing a lot of up and down when we're up against HBO. In this past show, we were up against, you know, one of the guys we created on NBC, Gabriel Rosado, you know, is fighting on HBO as we have a show on NBC. So clearly, the live showing there, it's absolutely affected our rating. The good news, however, is that NBC Sportsnet keeps showing these over and over and over again. They also are giving them to the local Comcast affiliates throughout the country who are, again, showing them over and over and over again. And what we're learning is that once they've been on a few times, our audience is exceeding a million viewers for every single show. So it doesn't really matter if they're watching it live or if they're watching it a week later or 3 months later. We're making new fans because people are coming upon this as they're switching through the dials, and we're finding consistently our show, the re-airs, are coming out as the highest rating of the day for the network, so on NBC Sportsnet. So that's the really good news. I expect our audience will begin to grow when we don't have to go head-to-head with HBO, with the live viewing, but the delay that goes on at 12 or 1 o'clock after our show, those re-airs that go on for months afterward, they're all adding up, and that's the goal, make new fans.
Yeah, I've noticed that they re-air it a lot, and I actually like that because, you know, if I miss, like, a first bout of it, I'm able to go back. But the beauty with DVR, too, you know, DVR them, but it doesn't matter. I'm a boxing fan, you know, I'm an addict, so I can watch a fight over and over and over. But I want to talk about the decisions that – so the NBC Sports threw out one – what was a great big fight for a lot of fight fans in the heavyweight division was Thomas Adamick and Steve Cunningham. And the outcome, I'm pretty sure you saw the reaction of boxing fans. Let me ask you, does that affect you guys – a whole lot in terms of moving a fighter forward to another event, or even with NBC Sports, you know, with the executives there, do they cringe by reactions of fight fans when a decision is made like that, where thousands of millions of fans were saying Steve Cunningham was clearly the winner?
No. I get that a lot, and you're talking to the person who was sitting there in Pernell Whitaker's corner when he fought Julio Cesar Chavez and was sitting in Pernell Whitaker's corner when he fought Jose Luis Ramirez the first time, and I could go on. Actually, if you look at the biggest robberies in boxing history, main events was on the wrong side of a shocking number of them. and usually, you know, the fact is that it is a subjectively judged sport, and people are not going to agree a lot of the time. What I noticed on the Adamick Cunningham decision, was that people were arguing over one point, maybe the outcome of one round. I look back on the result of the Whitaker-De La Hoya fight, and if you remember, people said, well, Whitaker lost it because he didn't fight hard enough in the 12th round. Well, I remember walking around the ring that night with the scorecard showing everyone that Whitaker was behind by about 8 rounds if you looked at the scorecards. He didn't have a chance.
No,
right.
And I could come up with 50 examples right now off the top of my head where people were either outraged or not. Back then, they weren't. They said, well, it was the right result. What do you care? So I'm happy that people are really upset when they don't think the decision was right. I'm happy that it's gotten to the point where people actually care, because that night after Whitaker fought De La Hoya, it was one of the most frustrating nights of my life, because I couldn't get a single reporter to be outraged at the scoring, and it was outrageous. But now it's, wow, we get upset when we don't agree with what comes down to the decision on one round. So
right.
I think it's kind of a sign of progress. I think everybody, you know, I read the stuff, the blogs, whatever, the next day. Everybody's never going to watch a fight again. Everybody said that when Whitaker fought Chavez. Everybody said that when Whitaker fought Ramirez. I can't tell you how many times people said, I'm never going to watch a fight again. It's frustrating and it's upsetting. And I know that if you think about it, the judges are sitting at ringside. They don't have the benefit of the person sitting next to them to discuss what's going on. They are not listening to the announcers. They don't have earplugs on. They hear the crowd. They are watching it themselves. They are not talking while they're watching it. They are looking at it from an angle that is completely different from everyone else who's seeing it on television. The TV cameras are on one side of the ring. The judges are on the other three sides. So I don't find it that surprising that we all didn't agree on one of the rounds.
And I'll tell you, you know, since Twitter's come into the game, a lot of times I'll look around press row during a fight just to see. I like to watch the people watching the event, and you'll see guys that are just glued to their TV screen, or their computer screen, or they're tweeting constantly during it. They're on their phone. I think the attention span and the focus of press row has changed tremendously in the last five
years. Yes, it has.
And those judges are sitting there watching. It was a close fight, and that's. I think that's an excellent point. I wasn't a reporter, unfortunately, during Whitaker De La Hoya. I wish I was, because
go look on BoxRec. Look at the scores.
No, I've seen it. Yeah, it's pretty.
And then you can look at De La Hoya and Corte, and then I can give you a whole list if you like.
Oh, yeah.
Scores do not reflect what went on in the ring. Maybe the right guy won. But the other guy never had a chance unless he knocked him out all the time. And you know, to your other point, is it fair to the fighter? Steve Cunningham is most likely going to come back in a very big fight on NBC very soon, and that is the best way we can make it right. Not to say, well,
right.
The judges were wrong, so now your career's over. That's ridiculous. Everybody loves Steve Cunningham. He made 4 million fans that day. We want to bring them back and have them watch him fight on NBC again really soon.
Was your heart at your throat when what happened with Curtis, with the young man jumping in and attacking Curtis, your fighter, in the ring? I mean, you know, because you guys have been in that type of situation where there's a riot that's bursted out. Did you almost feel like, oh no, Glott all over again?
Oh, that's the first thing that went through my mind. You're right. I was standing. I was about to go up the steps, and I went, "Oops, don't do that."
Were you taking off your high? Go up the steps.
Turn around.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think in moments like that? I mean, I imagine it's something kind of scary when violence erupts like that. That's spontaneous.
Yeah, it is. And I got to say, the security people at Mohegan Sun are top rate. They did an amazing job. They got it under control in a second. I was really happy with that. I give them all the credit in the world. They're very good at their job.
It
could have gotten really ugly if they weren't.
That's true. You know, what is it about you and your company? You kind of seem to take guys that maybe other people are discarding, or it's like a free agent that people are kind of forgotten about, and you take them and you polish them up. Like you said, you're Gabriel Rosado, and boom, he moves into a big fight on a big network. Cunningham, Adamek, Curtis Stevens. What is it about you that you guys are able to do that? It's like Moneyball or something is what it reminds me of.
You know what it is? Here's the thing. I'm not going to be able to go out and sign someone because I offer them more money than the next guy. I don't have that kind of money. what I have is a lot of knowledge and a lot of experience and a tremendous staff. And our feeling here at Main Event is we add value. We're not signing fighters just because we can or because we have more money than the next person. We know that if a fighter has the talent and is marketed properly, is trained properly, and is busy enough, the chances are that fighter is going to do better than someone of equal or lesser ability. So we find those diamonds in the rough. Abjud is another one we kind of brought back from the dead once. You go out and find people. You find an asset. It's like any business. You find an asset that's undervalued. You do what you can to increase its value, and then you go out there and hopefully reap the rewards. That's our. We're just running it like a business, and I think in some respects I'll give us some credit. I've got Ellen Haley doing PR here, who was my assistant when Evander Holyfield was fighting. Jolie Mazzone is becoming one of the finest matchmakers in the sport, in my view. She's wonderful for relationships with the fighters. We've brought in some more people who are getting more and more involved with the marketing aspect of it. My daughter Nicole is now working with us. In addition to being a lawyer, she's been becoming an expert on Twitter and Facebook and how to market there. We have a few other people here. Another young woman, Alexis Mann, has come in, and she's doing a lot of video services for us, putting more and more videos about our fighters on the web and using those resources to the best of our ability. We sat down and said, okay, let's figure out how to take what we do have and leverage it to become successful. And part of the appeal, I think, to NBC at least, was that we went in there and said to them, this is what we know we can do. We don't have 60 fighters under contract. That means I don't have to put 60 fighters in bad fights just to keep them happy.
Right.
I can just put fights on that are competitive, and I have absolutely no interest in putting on a fight that isn't. So that kind of is actually amazingly, wonderfully liberating. And, my staff, another Kim Newman, who is our here, I want to give everybody credit. She's our controller and watches every nickel and gets involved in many, many other creative aspects of what we do. We're starting to really have a lot of fun. And when you're working with fighters who are willing to listen and accept and respect our experience, then it frees them to be able to just worry about the guy in front of them.
What do you think about being in this business for so long, you know, for the amount of time you've been in and been surrounded by these boxing businessmen that you've fallen with? What do you think about managers that you've never heard of? They don't have any type of credential or background in managing fighters, getting involved in the sport.
Well, again, the question, if you're going to get paid, is do you add value? I don't know how someone like that can add value. I could make that statement about some promoters that are involved in this sport. To be fair, I won't name any names. But the fact is, that to me is the question. If I'm a fighter and I'm deciding, you know, what do I want to do with my career, is this person going to add value? And I guess if giving you money is value and you think, what I tell fighters all the time is, if what you want is a big payday, you want money up front, you want somebody to pay for your living expenses, well, if you don't think you're going to be successful, then that's what you should do, because you'll get your money. But people who take it up front like that, people who give it to you up front, they're going to take it back on the back end. So if you're successful, they're going to be more successful. My feeling is, invest in yourself, and we'll invest in you too with our time and our effort and our whatever it is we have here to offer. We'll build your brand, and you'll have something to take with you when you leave here, or hopefully when you leave the sport, you know, after you leave us. I don't know that a lot of people who make their living in this sport could make that statement.
And the reason I ask you this is because we're starting to see this more of a trend with fighters that, you know, they get signed on a fight, maybe a possible breakthrough fight. Then all of a sudden, there's a name that nobody recognizes, starts talking to the fighter, and then the fight falls apart. I just don't get that how that happens. You know, I thought when a contract was signed by a fighter with a promotional group, I know the promotion is supposed to deliver a certain amount of fights, but how is it possible that somebody's able to intervene and intercept the fighter's decision?
Well, you know what? it's my husband had a great line. Fighters fight, contracts don't fight. They have to want to get in the ring and do it. And what I, this has gone back, I you know, again, to the very beginning. I remember MC Hammer explaining to Evander Holyfield that he knew more about boxing than my husband did. And his proof was that he had so much more money than my husband did, which is quite funny if you look at the situation now. The truth is that these people don't come and start talking to the fighters when the fighters are worthless. They wait until somebody adds value, and then they go and they convince them that they know more. And everybody, we have all experienced this. And again, it goes back as far as I can remember. And it's a shame that it happens. I think the fighters, to some extent, I think they kind of fall prey to hearing what they want to hear from people. There's a lot of backbiting. Part of the problem too is, you know, as you pointed out, you've got people managing and promoting who are essentially amateurs. And when you do know what you're doing, I don't know how somebody can see the difference between someone who does know what they're doing and somebody who doesn't. So it's easy for a guy, and why is it? I don't know. It's easy for a guy to. We had a fighter years ago. Met a guy on a bus who convinced him to change course in his career. I swear to God, I'm not making that up. And you sit there, and I remember my husband
maybe
saying,
gave a bus pass.
Well, it didn't occur to you if that guy was on a bus, maybe, I don't know. My entire life, I have either sat there with Dan or myself had these conversations with fighters, more recently than I'd like to admit, saying, think about it. We got you here. We'll get you the rest of the way.
Right.
And yet it's ball, but this guy says he can do a better job. Well, you know, he's not that sophisticated. You're not big time enough. He can get me on HBO. Okay. You know what? My attitude toward that is good luck. Let me know when the fight's scheduled. I'll be happy to attend it.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, these people rarely can. And
I guess that's why I'm new in the business. I'm like 7 years in, and I care a great deal about boxing. And
I got my 2 weeks badge on.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's so I'm still a neophyte, I guess, why I bring it up. But I think that's why I kind of picked a corner, you know, PEDs kind of picked me in a sense, but that I can maybe try to clean up, because it is from the guys that sneak in with a stopwatch around their neck and a towel on their shoulder that say they're a trainer, to a guy like that that says, hey, I'm a manager. It's the most unregulated thing I've ever seen. And I just want to clean up just a corner, you know, and then just be done, because it's. You know,
it happens
sure
with trainers too. You're right. I remember, you know, I've told fighters from time to time, we try to bring them to one of the best trainers in the world. There's maybe 10 guys that I could say, yeah, he could train you. And we want to bring you to him. Meanwhile, people who have kids who play tennis are mortgaging their house so they can send them down to Florida to train, you know, with Nick Baltieri or whomever. In every other sport, people recognize the value of an excellent training situation. Not in this one. This is the sport where you take your little league coach with you to the big time. I can you imagine a guy getting signed by the Yankees being told that, well, my little league coach is going to have to come with me, you know, because I want to be loyal to him. You know what?
Yeah.
it's a business. It really is. You get one career. You get one shot to do this thing. And again, it's the beauty of our NBC deal is that if somebody wants to develop that attitude, I can say, you know what, good luck.
Yeah, exactly.
We can move on. We're going to still be here. So.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Kathy, it was fun and informative speaking to you. It's always fun when we get a chance to talk to you here on the Leaving the Ring radio cast. Till next time. And we wish you all the luck with your fighters and with the NBC. Keep that up. I mean, I love it. I love it. I know a lot of fighters appreciate it.
I should have said this before. February 23rd, we're going to be out at 10 o'clock. John?
Yep.
10 o'clock, February 23rd. 10:30. Oh my God, so sorry. 10:30, February 23rd. If you don't want to watch an ESPN fight on Showtime, you should be watching our fight on NBC.
Or give a DVR and just, yeah, see it all at the same time.
Or you could DVR it, absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, you want the ratings. We want to give you the ratings because we need to
give me the ratings. I appreciate
right.
that. Thank you.
Right. Kathy, yeah, have a happy Friday and enjoy your weekend. And happy belated Valentine's Day to you.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Promoter Kathy Duva here with us on Leaving the Ring. And given her takes about the PEDs and along with the ratings of the NBC Sports program that they have embedded, and you know, about judging, she dropped a lot of information for us to take in. And if you missed the show, don't worry about it. You can catch it on the replay. You can even catch it on the replay if you download the Leaving the Ring app. You know, and
you know, it's I'll say this too, just on a as we're heading into the end here, the fight schedule. There's going to be some big news probably within the next, well, it's Friday. So probably by mid next week, I would say this might be announced, maybe Tuesday at the latest. It probably will break over the weekend, though. But there's going to be a major announcement regarding PED testing in boxing. Not a positive test, but a positive bit of news that I think is going to be kind of groundbreaking. I got the news kind of just a few minutes ago during that interview. So it's going to be interesting because I know Kathy makes a lot of good points about how hard it's all going to be. But I think this interesting development changes things. So, Dave, I'll tell you off the air. Everybody else is going to have to wait a little bit until I know it's kind of a done deal and I can clear it to be released. But let us jump into the fight schedule. As we talked about before, Mohegan Sun Friday night. In Uncasville, Connecticut, ESPN2 Friday Night Fights. Delvin Rodriguez, 26-6-3 versus George Tadunanipa, 31-0-1. Yeah, I just totally failed on that. Beyond Jargal, 17-3-3 versus Chris Howard, 14-2-1. At the Forum in Delamayo, Navajoa, Mexico, Ramon Yoriboy Campos, 17-1 versus Gabriel Martinez, 27-5-1. How crazy is that draw? One draw in, like, you know, 18 fights. February 16th, it's a Saturday at the Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City, New Jersey. HBO, Adrian Broner, 25-0 versus Gavin Reese, 37-1-1 for the WBC lightweight title, or unless you're promoting him for the undisputed lightweight title. Sakio Bika, 35-2 versus Nikola Sekloka, 25-0. And Demetrius Hopkins is also in support, 32-2-1 versus Charles Whitaker, 39-13-2. And Edner, the cherry bomb, 36-2 versus Vicente Escobedo, 26-4. You know, I'll tell you what,
I don't know why the cherry and the Escobedo fight is not the support.
Thank you.
Of the main event. I really don't get that. I mean, now, whose screw up was that there? Don't get me wrong. Bika, love Bika. Rough,
not
rugged.
Entertaining. Yeah.
You know, but he's not a co-feature. Come on, let's be honest. He's a fill-in.
You know
you
what
know?
He is? He's with Al Heyman.
Yeah.
Edgar Cherry versus Vicente Escobedo is a really good fight. I think that's going to be fight of the night. Anybody in attendance, that's going to be a fun fight.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and man, when I saw it's not going to be televised, I was like, really?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's the fight that I was actually looking forward to watch.
Yeah,
but
somebody can get that on their phone. You know, hook a brother up.
Yeah,
I will watch that on my phone at the Emperor's Palace in Kempton Park, South Africa. Heki Budler, 21-1 versus Renan Tronco, 12-3 for the Ring Magazine Something Something. And that, my friends, it is grim. Yes, it is. Is your weekend fight schedule?
You know, I thought that
Amanda Serrano's fighting. My favorite. 16-1-1 versus Wanda Azuna, 8-4 in the Dominican Republic. So there you go. All is not lost.
For some reason, I thought that Alejandro Alacran Perez was fighting today.
No, that's
that's next week, isn't it?
It is next week. And also on Sunday, just to round it out, Denis Boitsev, 31-0 in Germany, in Schwerin, Germany, versus Marcello Nascimento, 16-4, heavyweights in action. And that is your weekend fight schedule. Dave?
Dave, back to you. Anyways, Fight fans, hey, thanks for tuning in on our Nooner. We didn't get Josecito Lopez, unfortunately. I don't know what happened there, but we'll get him next week or something. 3-4, I'm already throwing out the number. Anyways, everybody, enjoy your Friday. It's beautiful outside, man. I'm itching right now just to go outside and get some. Yeah, go get some. I want to go get some steak and some chicken and throw it on the grill. Get a 12-pack here and relax and enjoy my 3-day weekend here. You know, President Day on Monday.
Yeah, I'm getting ready for a little 3-day weekend action myself. I can't wait. Sometime around 10 o'clock tonight, that dude from the Bay Area is going to be a little drunk, a little lonely. He'll start at me at Twitter, and I'll laugh at him. Like I did last week. Other than that, I have no plans. I think I'm going to go for maybe a little camping adventure. Who knows? Anything could happen, Dave. I'm excited with a 3-day weekend. As always, dude. Fun show. It was impromptu, but I like these Nooners. You know.
I'm excited about using my Valentine's new wallet that was given to me, because the one I had before was all, you know, my money was falling out of there, my ID, it was all tore up from the floor up, you know. Oh my God, I just used a 90 phrase. Anyway,
that's a bummer too. When it's more convenient now, because when you get racially profiled, you don't want all your stuff to fall out of your wallet, you know, when you get pulled over. You know, you want to be able to pull out that ID fast.
Yeah, pretty quick. And anyways, my fans, don't drink and drive. Be safe out there. The reason you don't drink and drive, because you'll spill your beer. And be good. Enjoy this weekend with your family. Again, my partner, Gabriel Montoya, myself, Dave Duenas. Don't forget to download the app. If you're a fighter, promoter, a fight fan, download it. Support Leave It in the Ring. We did it strictly for the listeners so that it's our way of giving back. It's for free. And it should be a lot of fun. You're able to interact with us on Twitter. You're able to email us directly from the app. And you're able to call in the show directly from the app. Leave It in the Ring Radio will be back Thursday on our original scheduled time. These holidays just screw us all up. Anyways, till next week, Gabriel, you have a good one, brother.
You too, man. Peace.